Welcome, everybody. This is the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby sitting in for Mike tonight. I'm broadcasting all the way from chilly Detroit City up in the Rust Belt Midwest. I just heard some of the weather down there in Phoenix, KPHX, our home station. And what is it, 80s? Man, still winter here in the Motor City. Well, I would invite you to join me on the Mike Malloy Show. 800-989-1480 is the toll-free number. And some of you may remember a few weeks back, I started to broadcast for Mike, and the gremlins of technology took me off the air. Well, we're into it now, and I'm thinking we're going to get through the whole deal. You know, one of the disadvantages, well, there's an advantage and a disadvantage to doing a late night evening show the way Mike does. And that is, the disadvantage is almost everybody has commented on everything that's transpired during the day, right? But it's also an advantage because you see what everyone else has said and you kind of get an idea of should you bother to repeat it all or should you say, man, they never got to the real point, which was blah, blah, blah. Well, today, a solemn occasion, the 40th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King. And in many ways, I'm grateful for everything that's come before us on all of the affiliates here, because it would be quite a challenge to sum up the life of Dr. King, and no need to do it. One of the unfortunate things, I think, is that I hope not to too many of us, that Martin Luther King, like so many histories, so many personages of history, they can kind of become a cliche. We've all heard, I had a dream and I've been to the mountain. And boy, I was just listening to I've been to the mountain speech on the way in, and I was thinking, what a chilling and thrilling speech that with all of the official idolatry of King, that once you kind of sweep that away, here is a man so unique, and he was part of an era, part of a movement, of course nothing by himself, but he was able to summarize the feeling of a people, the feeling of an era, to be sure. And I was thinking, though, in listening to everything he said and what he represented, he really represented the apex of the bourgeois revolutions of the 18th and even 17th century, including ours here in the United States. In the late 18th century, also in the late 18th century, where there was the French Revolution and their trinity. In fact, it's sort of the trinity of modern democracy: liberty, fraternity, and equality. And he enunciated that in such a manner, and took it into the realms of war and peace, took it into the realms of social justice, of labor rights. And have we, in the last 40 years, gotten very far, or have we, in fact, retrograded, if that is a verb? Well, I guess in many ways, we've kind of gone the other way. Well, you've probably seen all the Republican and Democrat, black and white, it says here in the AP news, the three remaining presidential candidates summon memories of the Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr. This is, when I started hearing that, I mean, that's so perfunctory, and I'm sure maybe all three of them, maybe just one of them, who knows, really feels it all very deeply. But Senator John McCain, who told a black audience that he had been wrong to vote against legislation making King's birthday a holiday, he said the quality of his character is only more apparent, and he apologized for voting against the establishment of Martin Luther King Day as a holiday. But he also, I don't think he mentioned the fact that he also voted voted against a commission that would increase recognition of the holiday. And here he says, McCain said King, quote, was called an agitator, a troublemaker, a malcontent, and a disturber of the peace. These are often terms applied to men and women of conscience who will not endure cruelty nor abide injustice. I hate to find myself agreeing with John McCain, who would be more of the same, of course, but it's true. And that's what I think it's that Martin Luther King called upon us to be, and that is agitators, troublemakers, malcontents, and disturbers of the peace. And we've seen that throughout American history, perhaps throughout all of our human history, that those are the people that change things. The people that go along to get along, it's understandable. When you do things like Martin Luther King Jr. did, there's often a price to pay. And he, of course, paid the ultimate price. And his family paid the ultimate price. And he had powerful enemies aligned against him. I certainly think there was a conspiracy involved, that James Earl Ray being able to pull this off by himself. Well, I suppose he could have shot him by himself, but his travels after that, and now what links him to these four racists in Georgia, and also I heard Tom Hartman today talking about to a mafia kingpin in New Orleans who similarly had a connection to the Kennedy assassination. I mean, one really doesn't know entirely what to make of that, but very few of us believe that those were just random acts to take out people, the Kennedy brothers, Martin Luther King Jr., and even Malcolm X. That's the call as far as I'm concerned. Be an agitator, be a troublemaker, be a malcontent, be a disturber of the peace. I think that's critical. And also, to make real the revolution, I mean, that deserves its name. And now to have a revolution based on liberty, fraternity, and equality, that makes you a revolutionary. And that demands that you become an agitator, a troublemaker, a disturber of the peace, to be sure. If you want to join me, any thoughts on that, 800-989-1480. I don't know if I want to talk a lot about this, and I'm not sure. I've only heard a few of your shows during the day. But as most of you know, or at least many of you know, Air America suspended on-air host Randy Rhodes for making what they called inappropriate statements about prominent figures, which actually was Geraldine Ferraro and Senator Hillary Clinton. She did an appearance on behalf of Air America in San Francisco, and it was sponsored by one of their affiliate stations. She called both Hillary Clinton and Geraldine Ferraro effing whores, if you will. Maybe I shouldn't say that. You guys, a lot of you out in the West there, the kids are still up. But I suppose, given mainstream television, that's not shocking too many people. Charles, the head of Air America, Charles, I don't even know how to say his name. Kirker, let's call him. Charlie Kirker said, Air America encourages strong opinions about public affairs, but does not condone such abusive ad hominem language by our hosts. Wow, I thought this was a liberal network. Well, I don't know how many of you saw Randy's talk. It was pretty raw and pretty rough. And something she's known for, she skirts it kind of on the air, but put her up in front of a live audience and a mic, and she is something. You can actually, it's all around, by the way, it's all around the internet. But if you go to my website, you can also get a look at me as well and see a little more about me, Peter Werbe. And if you go to Peter, Werbe, that's Werbe, peterwerbe.com, and you can hear Randy Rhodes talk. Well, I've been actually arguing online that said that that what she said was so offensive, so sexist, so, that if a man had said it or if they would have used a negative word about an African-American, that they would be gone in a second. And I, on one hand, have some sympathy for the way people were offended. But it's language, and it wasn't on the radio. And as a radio talk show host who, along with Mike Malloy, has had trouble because of our opinions, because of what we said. Now, we don't say people are it's hard for me to say that. I'm old school. F and W words. We don't say anything like that. But Mike Malloy and I, as many of you know, used to broadcast on the old IE America radio network. And we began in 2000. And we were premature anti-Bush haters, So when we began calling Bush, as Mike does, the Bush crime family, because we recognized him for what he was immediately, and I called him Bushco, Bush Incorporated, a racket masquerading as a government, calling him the loser because, remember, he lost the vote and cheated his way into the White House with his father's buddies in the Supreme Court. We lost station after station after station. because of what we said, because of our political opinions. Now, you could say, well, wait a minute, though. You didn't use ad hominem arguments. Well, yes, Mike Malloy uses ad hominem arguments about this criminal thug in the White House, doesn't he? And I just did it as well. So should I be yanked from talk radio? Ooh, but she said the F word. She laid the F bomb. Well, I'll tell you, folks, we got to defend our talk show host. And I honestly hope that Randy's out of there. And I can think of a very interesting network that I'd like to see her on. But anyway, I'd like to hear your opinion on any range of subjects, including Martin Luther King Day. Or if you want to talk about talk show hosts, you give me a shout. Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy on the NovaM Radio Network, 800-989-1480. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. I want to get to the chorus of this. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show on the NovaM Radio Network. Peter Werby broadcasting from one sector of hell in the upper Midwest, Detroit City, Rust Belt area. 800-989-1480. AC/DC saying about what 81% of us say in a recent poll taken by the New York Times and CBS. 81% of us say the nation is headed on the wrong track. It took a while. 2002, people, about 35% of us said we were on the highway to hell. Now 81%, and a majority of every demographic and political group says this. Democrats and Republicans, men and women, residents of cities and rural areas, college graduates and those who only finished high school say the United States is headed off in the wrong direction. 78% of respondents said the country was worse off than 5 years ago. Just 4% said it was better off. That's the 4% who have ripped us off. That's the Bush base, right? And they're right. They're right. They're doing just fine, even with all that's going on. Now, I wonder, 81% say we're on the highway to hell. Who are these 19%? Hey, if you're one of the 19%, I promise you, call up, tell me why you think we're on the right track, and I will not give you a hard time. It's got to be a hardcore either nut job or hard. I don't even know, even conservatives, even Republicans think this. I would just be curious. I'm not going to give you, you know, like an enormous amount of time. I know Mike Malloy, when he does the show, he wouldn't give you like 10 seconds. He would say, go call one of those right-wing freaks. But I'm curious about these right-wing freaks. I mean, who in the world could still think we're on the right track? 21% of respondents said the overall economy was in good condition. I mean, who are these people, right? In the latest poll, 2 in 3 people said they believe the economy was in recession. Well, hello. We'll talk about that a little more. The poll found that Americans blamed government officials for the crisis more than banks or home buyers and other borrowers. That's good. That's because you get some of these right-wing twistoids saying it's those people that made they signed it. You know, it's their fault. Buyer beware and all that. This is sad always, but we've heard this a lot in recent years. Respondents were more pessimistic when asked in general terms about the next generation, with only a third saying it would live better than people do today. So 2/3 of us think, if you're younger than us, if you're in the generation below, people like myself and a lot of the listeners here, you're screwed, essentially. Sorry to say it. Charles Parrish, a 56-year-old, by the way, I'm reading from a New York Times article. Charles Parrish, a 56-year-old retired fireman in Evans, Georgia, he said, who's going to pay back the money? He's talking about the stimulus package. Who's going to pay back the money? He said, we are. They are giving me money, except I'm going to have to pay interest on it. Of course. And they said 58% of respondents said they would support raising taxes on households making more than $250,000 to pay for tax cuts or government programs for people making less than that amount. So that sounds pretty good. 58% of respondents said they would support raising the income tax on the top 5% of wage earners in order to give a tax break or provide government programs for people doing less well than the people making $250,000 a year. But 42% of the people said no. 42% of the people said, no, I don't think you should raise taxes on the wealthy. Well, I'll go much farther than that. I'm willing to do that. Confiscatory taxes, taxes that actually confiscate wealth from the ultra-wealthy. Now, this is a sound radical. Well, that's the way it was up till about 1960 when that, I guess he was supposed to be liberal, wasn't he? JFK. They altered the tax structure to benefit the wealthy considerably more than they had. It used to be after $6 million in income, the tax rate was 90%. So I know that was $6 million was a lot in those dollars, but how about if we go back to that? I'll give you two alternatives if you don't like, if you think that's too commie or something like that. That either we have after $6 million, you begin paying 90% tax, or the other thing that could be done would be, and this is the 800-pound elephant, or the that's not very big, it's the 800-pound gorilla. It's the pink elephant. The 800-pound gorilla in the room is the war budget, which totals, when you total up everything, $1 trillion. Well, cut it by, let's say, three-quarters. And then we'd still have the largest expenditure on military in the world. I think even at $250 billion, I think we'd almost still have more than anybody combined who we see as our potential adversaries. So that's it. Either confiscate the wealth of the ultra-wealthy, or let's get back to Earth and get rid of the military-industrial complex. More on this when we get back, and also I want to get your calls. Taxman, I love this. Thank you, Ian Huff in Phoenix. 800-989-1480. Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy on the NovM Radio Network. Back to get your calls after these. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy. And almost feeling bad about interrupting that wonderful tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. by U2. Bono, when he's singing that live, I don't know if you ever heard the live version, but at one point he speaks the name of who the song is about, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and he says, Saint. And Bono is a Christian. I'm not. And at first, I kind of took offense. I said, why is he interjecting his religion? Of course, it was Martin Luther King's religion as well, and a lot of what motivated him was his Christian beliefs. But if there is such a thing as a saint, I really think that here's a man, both in terms of how he lived his life and also his martyrdom, that qualifies him as such. Okay, 800-989-1480. Right before the break, right now I'm going to get to the phones, too, so hang on there. A little patience, friend. I wanted to read this. By the way, if you're bashful or if the lines are filled at 800-989-1480, you can email me at calltalkyes, calltalkyes@yahoo.com, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Whenever I do the show, I get so many, I can't possibly read them all, but I'll try to grab a few. Gila, who is, she's a hometown gal, Farmington Hills, Michigan, a suburb of Detroit, where I'm broadcasting from. Nice to hear you during the week, besides Sunday nights when I usually broadcast. Mike says we should ask you to talk about your days back in the day when you were in the streets protesting. What do you mean, back in the day? I still do it. Come on, get out there on the streets. Gila says, I don't have a problem with what Randy Rhodes said. Hello to the Malloy truth seekers at Democratic Underground. Well, before the break, I was talking about the nation, the national poll from the New York Times and the CBS news poll people that say that 81% of us say the nation is headed on the wrong track. And the only figure I didn't give was that 43% of those surveyed said they would prefer a larger government that provided more services. Duh. It sounds like a perfectly good idea, which is tied for the highest such number since the time when CBS began asking the question. But an identical 43% said they wanted a smaller government that provided fewer services. I mean, are people that brainwashed? Come on. I mean, you look at the Scandinavian countries, for instance, and see the level of services they get. People say, well, they really pay high taxes. Well, you get a lot back for it. We don't get anything back for it. We don't get anything back for it at all. I'll tell you what we get. We get the military-industrial complex, this $1 trillion a year that's spent on the war machine that's absolutely unnecessary. I said before the break that we could afford everything we need, cut back taxes for everybody under $50,000, have a $50,000 off-the-top tax deduction, for instance, if we reduce the war budget by three-quarters and still remain safe. It might mean that we'd have to stop being so belligerent and engaging. I don't even say we. Outfits like Bushco, the Bush administration, the racket posing as a government. But here in The Nation magazine, you can go to thenation.com, March 31st edition, they talk about the cost of the war. Well, the cost of the war, of course, so far, that out of pocket has only been $500 billion. But we know, it's going to wind up to be $2 to $3 trillion, $3 trillion, probably. And so one of the things that The Nation did, it factored in what the cost of Cleveland, Ohio was, working-class city suffering a lot in economic terms, and they've lost out $479 million. And they list all these things, probably too long to bother with, but almost 50,000 homes with renewable electricity, 25,000 children with health care, 15,000 people with health care, and on, 5,000 scholarships for students, 1,000 cops, 700 elementary school teachers, and on and on and on. But where does the money go instead? You say, well, it's making us strong. It's making us safe. Well, even if you bought this whole ball of wax that we are under such threat that we have to spend $1 trillion a year, that we have to have 700 to 800 bases around the world, that we have to put missile defense shields in Eastern Europe to guard against this country that doesn't have nukes and would never nuke Eastern Europe no matter what. Here's where the money goes, besides just buying what does not turn out to be much bang for a buck. You know, the military-industrial complex, I mean, sure, some jobs are created, but nothing like it went into the public sector. So one of the things that happens is that Robert Stevens, who's the CEO of Lockheed Martin, makes $25 million a year. That's right. And they're a war contractor. They're a munitions maker. And he makes $25 million a year. Now, what does he do to earn that? That's a whole other question. But you and I are paying for this. This is what we pay for. He gets his salary because we pay taxes. And when you look at your paycheck, Maybe you're making, I mean, I'm sure a few of you are making $150,000 a year. I doubt very many of you, because statistically, there's not very many people in this country, maybe 10% of the population making over $150,000 a year. But if an average wage earner, and you look at your salary, and you see that percentage that's taken out, understand that a portion of it is going to pay Robert Stevens $25 million a year. But he's really high paid. So you might say I'm exaggerating the effect of it all. Actually, the average income of CEOs at the top 30 military contractors is only $9 million. So he's, you know, in the stratosphere. So we're being looted, folks. That's it. We're working our butts off if we're lucky enough to have a job and not having it outsourced, or not having to work harder and more, if we're not taking wage cuts, if we're not scared to death that we're going to lose our jobs. And these guys are looting the wealth that we create for the companies at which we work. Let me see. I got too many piles of paper here. All right. That is your advantage, because then I'm going to finally go to our phones. Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy, 800-989-1480. Let's go to our first caller. Man, this screen is hard for me to see. Okay, I got it. Here is Natalie. Natalie is listening on KTLK in Garden Grove, California. Welcome to the broadcast. Peter Werby here for Mike. Hi.
Hi, nice to talk to you, Peter. I want to comment a little bit on what you were saying about the sincerity or possible insincerity of the candidates who are speaking in Memphis.
Sure.
And on Huffington Post, Cornel West wrote a blog kind of assailing Barack Obama for not being down there along with Clinton and McCain. And I actually think that what Barack Obama was doing was better, and not kind of pandering to that audience, and instead kind of speaking to a different choir rather than doing the same thing. I mean, the people in Memphis don't need to be reminded of something in which they've been immersed for 40 years. And you know, the people in Indiana that he spoke to, I have a feeling that they're much more removed from that situation in terms of culture and maybe in terms of race.
Yeah,
and so
I think it's important for John McCain to make an appearance, given his record on Martin Luther King Day. But Barack Obama, I guess in many ways, he's lived what Martin Luther King Jr. Talked about.
He has. And one of the fundamental elements of community organizing is that you do reach out to other areas. And I think for McCain and Clinton, and I'm actually conservative, but I do believe that for their being down there was more of a way of saying, what votes can we siphon from a community which we've largely ignored for so long?
Natalie, you're not in that 19% that thinks everything's okay, are you?
No. I'm probably closer to the 42% that's saying don't raise taxes more than the 19% saying everything's okay.
Well, wait a minute. Do you care if taxes are raised on people making over $250,000 a year?
Well, I do believe that the tax code needs to be rewritten and grossly, but at the same time, I think you're going to harbor a lot more bad feelings if you kind of lash out, even if it's to such a minority that, you know, it won't make a big difference in the economy for, you know, regular earners.
Well, the rich people always get PO'd when you try to take their money away, even if it's an extraordinary amount. I mean, here,
yeah,
I advocated that over $6 million, that 90% tax rate go into effect. So, I don't know. I mean, I suspect you don't make anywhere near $6 million.
No, I would love to make somewhere near $6
million. Well, but look, you and I probably won't even make $6 million in our lifetime.
No,
and I think you can live kind of well on $6 million. So for, you know, people say, you sound like a commie when you start talking. But, you know,
but at the same time, there is I look at the economy now, and especially with the housing crisis, and I almost bought a house during the worst period. And I look at people who did sign on that dotted line, and there is a level of not so much blame or just responsibility that you have to take. And for the people who were out there buying $500,000 houses and only earning $23,000 a year, that those were the consequences.
Well, I have to say my sympathy for them is a lot less than the thousands of people that were sold a bill of goods. It's unfortunate that we can't live in a society that you don't trust people, and that people would take advantage of those that are the least able to defend themselves. All right, Natalie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. Well, we got one call in. I think I can get a lot more in as well. I really want to hear what you folks have to say. I listen to Mike, most nights I get at least part of the program. And he's got a terrific audience, so I'm pleased to be here subbing for him. Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy. We'll talk more when we come back. 800-989-1480. Back after these.
Bring home the victory. Bring home the pride. Bring home the bodies of soldiers who've died. But it's not enough for the villains to fall. Bring home the money to pay for it all.
Frog, when he jumped and he ran into a toad on a one-way street, to the open road from the redwoods going up to the sky, to the DC streets where the homeless lie, to a policeman wondering who he's working for, and to a soldier wishing that there wasn't any war, and from Harlem to the heartland in digital time, to some grains of sand, been a long time running.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby in for Mike, broadcasting from Detroit. Our number 800-989-1480. 81% of us say we're on the highway to hell, the latest poll from the New York Times and CBS. And I was making the point that in the survey, 43% of us said we'd prefer a larger government that provided more services, pardon me, but that an identical 43% said they wanted a smaller government that provided less services. How are you going to be like Rwanda if we have less services? That's interesting, though. The largest survey ever conducted among doctors on the issue of healthcare financing reform found that almost 60% of doctors support the government legislation to establish a national health insurance program, while 32% opposed it, 9% neutral. Such plans typically involve a single federally administered social insurance fund that guarantees health care coverage for everyone, much like Medicare currently does for seniors. The plans typically eliminate or substantially reduce the role of private insurance companies in the healthcare financing system, but still allow patients to go to the doctor of their choice. So that seems to me to be a much better idea and a perfect place for intervention. Are those 43% of the people that say they don't want that? Do they want to keep either not having health care? I suspect these are probably the ones that have some. But still, the amount of money that we pay in copays, where are we going to get the money to pay for it? Well, we got to end the war in Iraq immediately. We have to cut the defense budget, make that the war budget, the military-industrial complex, by three-quarters. And we have to start carrying out a confiscatory tax policy that would allow people that over $6 million to, and I use this verb advisedly, suffer 90% tax. Then we can perhaps take a 50% tax deduction right off the top. Wouldn't that be nice? And here's what Hillary Clinton says about her health plan. That they still got the insurance companies in there, and she said that Americans would have to pay no more than 10% of their income, which would be a reduction for some families. But if you're making $25,000 a year, you could still pay $2,500. I mean, they still don't get it. Neither does Obama. Clinton's made nearly $109 million since 2000. So what would happen with them? What would they make? Let me see. If that's 8 years. So they would make 40, I can't do all the math here, but that would leave them under my system with, say, $48 million only. Oh, poor babies. The government would take all their money and give it to the poor people. You really got to cry for them. And then 90% of what's over that. I mean, that seems decent to me. And they, they're good liberals, right? They should say, yeah, we go for it. All right, let's go back to a call, 800-989-1480. Here's Sue. She's listening to KTLK in Long Beach, California. Hey, it's Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, Peter, it's great to hear progressive talk instead of name-calling. Where have you been for the last couple of months?
I always call names, but go ahead.
Well, this is more civil and more informative than anything I've heard in a while. Yeah, about the Randy Rhodes thing, I think Air America may actually have a case because she was representing them at that appearance. And just as Geraldine Ferraro's comments have reflected badly on the Hillary Clinton campaign, even though nobody handed her a script, similarly, comments like Randy's and others on and off the air have reflected badly on the Obama campaign and on Air America, and it can't be good for ratings because I, for one, am getting sick of this, and I'm sure other people are, too. And when it comes to the election, whoever does win, we have to shake hands and get behind the winner. And that'll only happen if people feel that this has been a civil and fair campaign and not one of name-calling. Because I think if somebody wins because somebody else resorted or their surrogates or supporters resorted to name-calling and nasty stuff,
I hear you. I think, we don't live in a very civil era, and perhaps you could make the argument that it should start with us. And I find myself, starting to, with name-calling, calling conservatives, whack jobs and psychos and stuff like that. It's kind of hard not to. And the other thing is that what has happened, I mean, this is not NPR. This is not National Public Radio. So there is an element of entertainment in the kind of talk radio that I do and that Mike does. So we have to kind of keep up a level sometimes that's a little bit beyond the civil discourse that people would have. So let me take your opinion at that and get another call before our break. Here's Richard. He's listening to KPHX in Phoenix. Hi, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Doing great.
Yeah, I'd like to agree with that for the caller before me. It's so healthy and refreshing to hear some good progressive talk. And I think my thing with Randy Rhodes is I've listened to Air America since its inception, mm-hmm. and Randy was the first one I heard. And I loved her, and I've always loved her. But, granted she wasn't on the air, and she was representing the station, but I think her behavior was a culmination of the last month or so of her Clinton bashing on her show day in and day out. I got sick of listening to her show because that's all she would do is bash Hillary Clinton. And this was the straw that broke the camel's back.
But Richard, you can deal any talk show host the cruelest blow of all. Well, I mean, I suppose getting fired is the cruelest blow of all.
Right.
But as a listener, you can deal a talk show host the cruelest blow of all by what? Turning it off, I guess. But I just get really kind of nervous being a talk show host when I start seeing management saying this was irresponsible or what have you. All right, well, thank you very much. We're going to go to our top of the hour break. I got another couple hours here, and no guest. I often, when I substitute for Mike, I slot in a guest once an hour because, we learn a lot from him. But I think it's you and me going to kick things around. I purposely didn't get any. There's so many issues we can talk about. I got a lot more coming up. There's such a thing as Iraq still haunting us, eh? And Clinton and Obama questioned Bush's European missile defense plan. This just came off the wire. I thought this is wonderful. We'll see when I get back. Peter Werbe in for Mike Malloy. Be right back after the top of the hour. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe sitting in for Mike Malloy tonight. Please join us at 800-989-1480. Mike off on vacation. Mike and Kathy and little Molly having a good time. A well-deserved vacation. Guy works hard, so does Kathy. And I think they may, how old is Molly now? 3, 4? They probably got her working as well. Anyways, they're off to see the kids. And all next week, there'll be a variety of different hosts, and I'll be back next Friday as well. But we've got 2 hours tonight. Hope you'll join me. 800-989-1480. I got very excited when I saw this headline. Clinton, Obama questioned Bush's European missile defense plan. I said, this is what's necessary. Because I had this story from the New York Times from yesterday. Bush wins NATO backing on missile defense system. And this is the kind of thing, wait a minute, look at all the important things that are going on. I mean, with NATO stuff, that's kind of boring, isn't it? Every time I see one of these stories like this, I write down the title of Greg Palast's book, Armed Madhouse. That's what we are. That's what a good part of the world is, Armed Madhouse. And both elements of it, the noun and the adjective, are extraordinarily important, as you can imagine. And there was a big meeting of NATO in Bucharest, Romania, and that's... That's a North Atlantic nation, right? President Bush won NATO's endorsement Thursday. By the way, I'm quoting here. I would never call the man President Bush, as far as I'm concerned. He stole both elections, 2000 and 2004. But in fairness to the quote, you got to say it. President Bush won NATO's endorsement Thursday for his plan to build a missile defense system in Europe over Russian objections. Yeah, who the hell cares about them? You know, all they have are 10,000 nukes aimed at us. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice called it, quote, a breakthrough agreement for the military alliance. Now it is clearly understood in the alliance, pardon me, winter here in Michigan still, that the challenges of the 21st century, the threats of the 21st century, make it necessary to have missile defense that can defend the countries of Europe. Who's speaking here about defending the countries of Europe? The United States, that's 3,000 miles away. What's up here? You could ask yourself. And didn't the people that have done the most damage to us use car bombs and hijacked airplanes and speedboats? Isn't that where all the threats have come from? Progress on missile defense, the Times article says, represented perhaps the biggest boon to Bush from the NATO summit. Russia has fiercely opposed it. Oh, who cares about them? They're always giving us a hard time since 1917, haven't they? Rice also noted that, that's what I said, didn't say that in the Times. Rice also noted that NATO has also asked Russia to stop its criticism of the alliance effort and to join in the cooperative efforts that have been offered to it by the United States. What the hell are you bitching about, Russia? I mean, all we're doing is building missile defense systems on the perimeter of your country. And, well, I mean, we haven't done that since the Cold War when we surrounded the Soviet Union with missiles and missile defense systems. Actually, did we have missile defense systems? Those weren't permitted. This is something new. The NATO statement calls on the alliance to explore ways in which the planned U.S. project to be based in Poland and the Czech Republic can be linked with future missile shields elsewhere. So what's going unsaid in here, of course, is the shield is against who? Well, the reason that Russia is so PO'd about this is they realize that this is something that could be a shield against their missiles, because who else? Iran? That's what this is being sold. This is an armed madhouse. Madhouse. It is mad. It is truly crazy. It is insane to think that Iran, which according to the last intelligence estimate of the United States, said that Iran is not preparing nuclear weapons, and if they did... And why wouldn't they want to have nuclear weapons? Because they know if you don't have nuclear weapons, you get invaded by the United States and occupied for 6 years. If you do have nuclear weapons and actually have them and have tested them and you threaten the United States with them, like North Korea, they say, let's talk. Come on, let's make a deal. Let's be reasonable here and let's negotiate. So it would make sense to want to have nuclear weapons. But there's nothing definitive that Iran would have nuclear weapons. All right, so let's say they get them because they want to hedge against the hegemonic power in the Middle East, Israel, which has them. And I think there should be no nukes at all. Nobody with nuclear weapons, nobody with nuclear power. And there should be nuclear disarmament all over the world, including the Middle East, including Israel, including the United States, Russia, and India, and the rest of it. Okay, so you have a situation, though, that weight on the line, that Iran develops nuclear weapons. Okay, so now it's got them, and they're crazy, right? They're absolutely crazy. They're as crazy as the guys in Washington. Well, I don't think so, because if they launched any kind of attack, conventional or chemical, biological or nuclear, anywhere in the world, either in the Middle East or in Europe, they would be obliterated in about a New York minute, right? So they're never going to do that. To that extent, it is a deterrent. There is a nuclear deterrent. They would be wiped off the face of the earth. So there is zero chance that Iran would ever attack. Why would they attack Poland? you know, Ahmadinejad would say, "I got an idea. Let's nuke Poland." Well, they might be a target if they have this missile system for the United States. So why are they doing this? One of the things that that the United States has promised Poland is they will upgrade Poland's military force. The United States. Now wait a minute. I mean, I'm always talking about pronouns. You got to be careful about the pronouns you use, because when I say we, like we're in Iraq, we're not in Iraq. George Bush and his monstrous lie is in Iraq and all the damage it's done to our people and their people. But here, we will be paying, you and I, to modernize the Polish army. Why? Because, well, they might have to defend themselves against Germany? Russia? Yeah, they both invaded them. So they want to have upgraded. No, I mean, it's just war for the sake of war. In many ways, it's become. It's an expenditure that the whole world will be wasting its wealth. Not, well, you wouldn't waste your wealth if it was being spent on human needs. Wasting the wealth on preparation for war. And eventually something will happen. Be sure of it. But we are then, you and I, with our paycheck, are going to pay to upgrade the Polish army and to pay United States corporations to build this huge missile system. Well, partly it is just insanity. It is part of the armed madhouse, to be sure. But it's more importantly, it is part of the military-industrial complex that we were talking about last hour. It's the part of the $1 trillion of expenditure that's looted from you and I to be spent on absolutely unnecessary war material in order to justify $29 million a year for the CEO of Lockheed Martin, Robert Stevens. It's a racket. It's an absolute racket. And you know what? And I said, boy, I got so excited because Clinton and Obama questioned Bush's European military defense plan. This just came in from Yahoo News. Well, they're not really doing it at all. I mean, they're both such a disappointment in terms of anything that's going to get us off the dime to really change us, to make change something more than just a a slogan on a lawn sign. They both question the logic, the two candidates, of deploying a missile defense system in Eastern Europe before the technology has been proven. They're not opposed to this mad act. They're not opposed to reigniting the arms race. What they're opposed to is that the technology has not been proven yet. Senator Obama, according to a campaign spokesman for Bill Burton, said, Senator Obama welcomes the progress. He welcomes the progress on missile defense out of the NATO summit. I'll tell you, that could in itself could almost make me say, screw this guy. Except Clinton says the same thing. There's only one reason I'm going to vote for either of these people, no matter who winds up to be the Democratic nominee. And I'll tell you, I got to tell you, I don't follow anything about these primaries. I couldn't care less about all the insults they trade and the charges and whether or not she was under sniper fire and whether or not Obama did this or said that or doesn't have enough experience or whatever. There's only one thing I want to do. I want to make sure that John McCain does not become the next president of the United States, because John McCain will mean more of the same. John McCain will mean more of the same. That's my only interest. So on November, whatever it is, I'm going to go in there, hold my nose, vote for one of these centrists who are going to be doing nothing to alter the ultimate, positioning of what's happening in our world today, and know that the only reason I'm doing it is a stopgap so that there can be something, pardon me, that'll create a real movement for change in this country. All right. I think I'm going to let you talk. I still got my winter cold. Not a cold. The remnants of it. In fact, this song is better than anything I could say. 800-989-1480. Back to calls, and we come back on the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Peter Werby on the Nova M Radio Network.
The whole thing turned out pretty grim, cause none of his hair belonged to him. Too old, too old. He's too old to cut the mustard anymore. He's too old to cut the mustard anymore.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby broadcasting from Detroit. In for Mike, Phil Collins, Land of Confusion. I've had this idea. I don't know if I could ever sell this as a format to any management, but there are so many songs that speak so powerfully to the world that we live in that we could kind of alternate. Take a couple calls and then play all of Phil Collins' Land of Confusion, or we were playing earlier U2's Pride in the Name of Love about Martin Luther King. Got an email from A.E. He wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Have you noticed that we could end up with a president who wasn't born in the continental United States if McCain or Obama becomes president? Both were born in territory controlled by the U.S. as a result of 19th century imperialism. Indeed. That is the case. All right. You'd like to join us? I'd like to hear from you. 800-989-1480. Let's go back to our phones and pick up Mark. Mark's listening to KTLK. Mark, hi. It's Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Okay. I'd like to tie together the assassination 40th anniversary of Martin Luther King today with the harassment that's going on with Randy Rhoads. But before I do, I wanted to know if you and I could agree a priori that the E. Howard Hunt versus Liberty Lobby case in 1985 and the King versus Lloyd Jowers and the government case in 1999, both juries came to the conclusion that the government was part of conspiracies to both kill JFK and Martin Luther King. Can we agree a priori that conspiracies exist?
I think conspiracies exist, yeah.
Okay. Now, Mike yesterday brought up the fact that Randy and Lionel and Tom Hartman were being pulled from the New York market and replaced with Ed Schultz. Now, Randy, I know, has a long history of bringing guests and authors on who have written books about the 9/11. And Lionel is a good friend of Dick Gregory, who was the co-author with Mark Lane of the assassination of Martin Luther King, codenamed Zorro. Mm-hmm. And Tom Hartman has invited 9/11 truthers on his show, has an open invitation for them, and supports their work. And Ed Schultz, on the other hand, who seems to have taken their spots, has gone on the air and quite often cut off anybody who brings up conspiracy topics. And there's recordings of him saying that they are the death knell of talk shows.
Well, Schultz is pretty mainstream. I mean, that's where he's really a centrist liberal. But, you know, he's only on live 3 hours a day, so he's not taking the place of Lionel and Randy. I mean, he's going to be on noon to 3 Eastern time, which is our pal Tom's slot. We all worked, by the way, Mike and Tom Hartman and me all worked at IE America, the old network, together back in the early part of this century. So is it a conspiracy? I don't know. I doubt that.
Well, this is what Mike had said yesterday. I'm just going off of what Mike said. He had said that the hosts that I had mentioned were being taken off the New York time slots and being replaced by Ed Schultz.
Well, he's not doing 9 hours, so he's not doing all of it. He's that Schultz broadcasts live noon to 3. He's often delayed in a lot of markets because you know, Tom Hartman, one of the best in the country, he's a superstar. But I don't know. Maybe they want somebody that sounds like Rush Limbaugh, and you know, his voice. My wife comes in and she says, "Why are you listening to Rush Limbaugh?" I said, "It's Ed Schultz."
Well, it's just a kind of a sad situation when if what Mike's statement is true, what he said yesterday, and that's it sounds like you're taking another position than when Mike said. We'll see. Maybe, yeah, I know he doesn't cover the entire day, but if Ed took a prime time spot and these guys were being bumped midnight or something like that, then they're, you know, putting a guy like Ed Schultz in the place of these heavy hitters like Randy Lionel and Tom Hartman is ridiculous. It's really sad when the truth can't get out, and then it's even sadder when you have people like Ed Schultz. And there's recordings in the archives.
Well, let me, before you get into that, let me just say that that management in the main, as we can see in the Randy Rhoads affairs, tends to be very conservative and plays often to advertisers. And that Ed Schultz is much more mainstream, as you defined, and could be much, much more acceptable to mainstream advertisers. Now, it sucks that that's the reality of it all. Like Mike Malloy and me, when we were broadcasting on IE America, we both started off with 14 stations. And I wound up with two, and Mike wound up with one. So I always said that Mike won.
Well,
all right, thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Here's Carl. He's listening to Winds in Miami, Florida. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hey, Peter, you talked about tax rates, and you said you thought a 90% tax rate was appropriate for, I don't remember the income level you
over
said.
$6 million.
Oh, over six. Oh my gosh!
Yeah, once you so on the money after that.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey,
well,
but I was going to say, just as you start, I hear the music in the background, so I'm going to have to ask you to hold on after you've been holding on so patiently. So we'll get. I'm going to start going through the calls a little quicker. I've got about 100 other subjects here, and I know you guys want to get on the air. So you can join us at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Peter Werbe in for Mike Malloy on the Nova M Radio Network. Back in Black, Peter Werbe in for Mike Malloy on the Nova M Radio Network. I think Ian in Phoenix played that because he knows I'm an anarchist. You know, black is the color of anarchy. Red, the color of communism, but black, anarchy. You know, there's an anarchist anti-defamation league that does not like anarchy, which is a system of cooperative administration of life, used as a synonym for chaos. But that's another story, isn't it? All right, 800-989-1480. AC/DC, by the way, singing that one all the way from Australia. Actually, I think they're just here on CD, at least in Phoenix. But, I want to get back to one of our callers. The Clintons making $109 million since 2000. And just handed this note, actually, by Steve Costan of WCSX in Detroit, who just learned that since the Clinton left office, the Clintons have made $41,489 a day. Now, this is when I was speaking earlier about confiscatory taxes, that this doesn't make sense, that we should have a tax system that maybe kicks them down to, this is capitalism. We're going to let the rich be rich. $5,000 a day. How's that? So they would only wind up, I don't know, I can't even do, what is it, times 365? I have no idea. But it's an extraordinary amount of money. And you understand that if you cut the income or the wealth of these ultra-wealthy people that are the control sector of this whole economy and political system and social system, that they would still, if we didn't alter the political apparatus as well and didn't have a larger distribution of income, which I'm not talking about here, they would still control everything. They would still have their fancy cars and their yachts and their big houses, and they would run everything and what have you. Like in Scandinavia, where the CEOs make in the hundreds of thousands rather than the tens of millions. All right, let's go back to Carl. Carl's listening in Winds in Miami, Florida. Thanks for joining us on the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe here with you.
Yeah, right. Peter.
Yeah, hi. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey. So speaking of taxes, Barack Obama released his returns about a week ago, and here's a guy who was making about $300,000 a year for most of the years, and then he had a year where he made $1.6 million, and another year where he hit $900,000. And his charitable contributions were usually around 1%. When his income went up, it went up to about 5%. If anybody benefited from the tax cuts for the rich that Bush put in, it would have been Barack Obama. And don't you think it's a little hypocritical? I want to get your take on this. And it kind of disputes the poll you're saying, talking about how everybody wants more government, they're willing to pay for it. Well, here's a guy who had the money to pay for it, and he's unwilling to pay for it. It seems like the money he would have saved from the Bush tax cuts, he would have at least given to charitable contributions. And I'll say that I think everybody wants more government service. They just want somebody else to pay for it.
Well, there is a group called Responsible Wealth, and these are made up, I think the chair of it, at least the co-chair, is Bill Gates' father. William Gates Sr., who, because of his son, is a multimillionaire. And whenever he and these ultra-wealthy people in Responsible Wealth, the group, when they get a tax break, they take all of that and they donate it to some cause to help less fortunate people. So, yeah, but, I mean, what I'm curious about, how did Barack Obama make all that money?
It was the book years, I think, when he sold his book.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
But, you know, I that's a good point about the Gateses, you know, but they always talk about how, I always hear rich people say, well, I could pay more taxes. Well, you know, Arkansas started a fund, I don't pay enough taxes fund, and I think so far $1,500 has been paid into it. You know, if these rich people really wanted to pay more taxes, why did they set up all these trusts and everything to avoid the taxes?
Well, the most generous people, when you'd speak, and this is not across the board, and this is not to indict anybody, but the most generous people in things like tipping and also percentage of income given to charity is generally the working class. The poor
yeah.
can't afford it. Middle class is okay, and then when you start getting up in the upper reaches, like you say, you know, 1% of giving. All right, Carol, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Thank you, sir. Here's Femicia. She's listening to KTLK in Los Angeles. Femicia, it's Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy. Thanks for joining me. Am I saying your name right?
Tanisha.
Oh, Tanisha.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They had it down. They had it down here with an F. But
I thought he did, but I wasn't sure he was in the right.
Wait a minute. No. It's my eyes. It says Tamisha.
I just wanted to make a couple of quick comments. My first comment was regarding Randy Rhoads.
Sure.
I just say that I feel that she's passionate about what she believes in, and she's willing to take a stand. Sometimes she's a little overboard, and she needs to tone it down probably because it can become offensive. But in the interest of protecting freedom of speech, I don't see that there's a problem. You know, children are asleep. It should be okay.
Well, she did it at a nightclub where,
mm-hmm.
I mean, think about Whoopi Goldberg, some of the things that she's let loose with at some of her appearances. And you know what? I mean, if I'm an offensive talk show host, what would be your inclination? Would be to turn me off,
I would
right?
turn the channel. I would turn the channel. So I can't see it being just so offensive that it'd be an uproar where they have to take her job away from her. You know, she believes in what she says, and so she's passionate. She looks it up, and I support her. My other comment was, I'm a woman of color, and I'm really annoyed with McCain going to apologize for his take on the Martin Luther King incident. And he,
mm-hmm.
to me, I just wish that hope that black people of color, affluent ones, who will vote Republican because that's what they feel that mainstream does. When you make a certain amount of money, you go Republican. I just hope that they see that this is really disingenuous of him, and they see it for what it's worth, and it's crap.
Well, I don't think, Tamisha, that anybody has any confidence in the sincerity of very many politicians, certainly not John McCain, who seems like a piece of work. But I think in many ways, talk about inappropriate language, I think it was inappropriate for him to do this mea culpa, you know, I'm sorry deal at this time. If he wanted to issue a statement saying, look, I've really changed my mind. I've really learned something about America. I've really seen the vision that Martin Luther King Jr. had. And now, as a senator, maybe I'll vote to give more money to the commission that is dedicated to increasing recognition of the holiday. You'd say, good, maybe the guy has done, you know, a decent thing here. But to do it on the anniversary, then it becomes about him. It's about him.
It was about, it's going to be an election year, and I need as many votes as I can possibly get, and I'll go about it in any way, any means necessary, which is the whole Bush administration, basically, any means necessary to get what we want. So that's just Bush talking.
Well, I thank you very much, Tamisha.
Okay, thank you for taking my call.
Oh, I appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. That's what I'm here for. Bye-bye now. Just a second back to Randy Rhoads. You know, Extreme speech is offensive to a lot of people. Some people think it adds to the kind of, confrontational era we live in and what have you. But you listen to NPR where you have these people going, rah, 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 and sometimes I listen to it, and sometimes I learn stuff for it. It's not the worst place to to listen in the world, but oftentimes these guys, they're bending over backwards so far, to be fair. They almost bend over backwards to the conservative side. But in any event, to say that I disagree with Hillary Clinton because I think her positions on this kowtow to corporations, and she's get all this money from who's she getting all that money from? Is it the medical industry or the pharmaceutical, something like that? Can't even remember. But, or to say, you know, she's an effing W. If you know this controversy and you can fill in the blanks, I said one of the words, obviously the W, before. Isn't that the same thing, essentially? And you can say, well, it's harsh, it's rude, it's irresponsible. What's responsible language? And who defines responsible language? If you don't like it, turn it off. I mean, she was in a nightclub. She essentially was doing a stand-up act. And the head of Air America comes on like some Republican. You're speaking irresponsibly. Screw him. What I say? 800-989-1480. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. And let's go back to Miami. And man, would I like to be in Miami. It is never going to get warm here in Michigan, I swear. Here's Ed listening to winds in Miami as well. Ed, it's Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, Peter.
Hi.
You are a breath of fresh air.
Well, thank you.
I'd like to expound my theory in reference to primaries and the plight of the American people.
All right, we got about a minute and a half, so we're going to have to do the headlines.
1 minute and a half, that's all I need.
Okay.
If an atom is split, it causes nuclear fission, right?
Yeah.
Chain reaction, spontaneous combustion.
Right, right.
And politically, we know the judicial checks against the legislative, checks against the executive, et cetera, et cetera. And religiously, we know that one thing happens as a result of another. So that I believe, according to my theory, which I call dialectical checks and balance, that eventually we'll elect the first black president. Other than that, we'll have a Queen Hillary on our hands.
I hear you. Well, it would be a big change, as Hillary said the other day. What we've had, how many presidents? 43, you know, that are white men, and a change. I mean, could signal a good change in attitudes. I'd be on that regard alone. I would be very pleased with either of them. I mean,
I'd like to say, don't count her out. Don't count Obama out.
Well, I think I don't know what she's in it for. I don't think she can. I don't think she can win the nomination, and I'm not even sure she could win the presidency if she gets elected. Okay, Ed. Here comes.
I'm not for Mr. Clinton either.
Yeah. Thank you, Ed. Thank you, sir. Thank you for joining us here on the Mike Malloy Show. Ian, you're playing such great music, and just a bit early, and we'll play this one out. But join us after the break. 800-989-1480. Peter Werby, in for Mike Malloy on the Nova M Radio Network.
Robbed a grocery store. I'm going to Disneyland. I just left our President George. I'm going to Disneyland.
All right. Peter Herbie in for Mike Malloy on the NovM Radio Network. Our number, 800-989-1480. That's a song. All right. Let's see. Bill, living in East Tawas, Michigan, writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says, I don't want to live in an America where a Randy Rhodes can't name call or criticize other Democrats. Maybe a few of you that don't realize, Randy Rhodes, the Air America talk show host, has been suspended by the Air America management for a stand-up routine she did in a club out in San Francisco where she called Hillary Clinton an effing W. And it doesn't, not the W in the middle of Bush's name. Randy didn't say these things on air, and she shouldn't be suspended. She appeared to be doing a Wanda Sykes-type stand-up routine. Bill from East Tawas says, personally, I will work hard for either Obama or Clinton to make sure McCain doesn't become president. Oh, this is this Bill. Hey, you didn't come up to ski. Bill owns the Bambi Motel in East Tawas and invited me to come up there and cross-country ski at the Corsairs course up there, which I sure should have done. Oh, this is, I could probably still do it. They probably still have snow up there. This has been the winter from hell. And Michael writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com a question. Which is worse, Randy Rhodes cussing or Bush not swearing and lying soldiers to their death? Yeah. Hey, by the way, I haven't mentioned this in a while. You can check out my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E. That's W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com. And let's go back to our phones. Gary's listening on Winds in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Gary. It's Peter Werbe in for Mike. You're on the air.
Yeah, it's a real treat to listen to you.
Well, thank you, sir.
And I'd like to say that disingenuous is definitely the right word to use with that McCain action today, what Tanisha was talking about.
Yeah, where he went to Memphis and said that he was sorry, so sorry.
Yeah, now that he needs votes, he's sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
And here's my question to you and everybody else out there. Who can you think of in the history of the United States that's done more to harm our country than George Bush?
Oh, I have one. Easy. British Admiral George Cockburn, who burned the White House in 1814.
All right, so in other words, you have to put George Bush in that category.
Yeah. You know, I know a direct descendant of Admiral George Cockburn. Can you imagine who that is? Alexander Cockburn, the columnist, is a direct descendant of Admiral Cockburn, who led the assault on Washington in 1814 during the War of 1812. So, yeah, no, I would, it's kind of a toss-up, George Bush or George Cockburn. We recovered, though. Think about this. We recovered from George Cockburn. I don't know if we're going to recover from
George Bush. I don't either.
George Bush.
I envision a Soylent Green future.
Well, that's what Ted Turner said, didn't he? We're all going to die, and the ones that aren't, we're going to turn into cannibals. That's nice. Catastrophism. But sometimes in my worst moments, I think that's possible. But with that cheery note, I want to say thank you, Bruce, for having joined us. Thank you, sir.
Good night.
Good night. Yeah, he was thinking about that. Well, I guess I didn't do that very. I hung up on Gary. Oh, my God. Sorry, Gary. Call back. My apologies. Here's Abe listening to us in New Jersey on Sirius Satellite. Thanks for joining us. You're our first Sirius listener tonight.
Oh, thank you. And thanks. You're doing a fantastic job tonight. I'm really enjoying you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I'm having fun.
Great. It sounds like it. I just wanted to make a comment regarding Obama's tax returns and the amount of money he's made. And a previous caller was commenting on, you know, how he's a hypocrite and whatnot. You know, I think the year that Obama made a lot of money, where his income and his and his wife's income jumped dramatically, I remember them saying that, you know, especially since he went to Harvard and it was all loans, I think they were paying back loans that year. And I don't know the exact figures, but that was that took a big chunk of money, you know, to clear off those loans. So, you know, just to put that to rest. The other thing I wanted to mention is I can't believe people are still bringing up this Reverend Wright issue. I mean, it's really such a non-story. And, I think, you know, I thought long and hard about it, because when the story broke and they were playing Reverend Wright's sermon, and they really kind of cherry-picked a couple of sermons and played them nonstop on the TV and some radio programs, I got to thinking, you know, I couldn't understand why everybody was so outraged. I wasn't. I didn't even think they were that big a deal. And then I realized that most people live in a bubble, and most people don't know what's really going on out there. So,
well, I know. I mean, Reverend Wright said that violence and oppression and what was the other word is and war is endemic to the U.S. system. Wow, what a crazy man. I can't believe that he actually could believe that about our dear country. I got to take a break right now, so thank you, sir, for having been our last caller this hour. But please stay tuned. We got one more hour of the Mike Malloy Show. I'm having a ball, and for the first time, there's some open lines at 800-989-1480. You'll be next on the Mike Malloy Show, right back after our top-of-the-hour information packet. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby, broadcasting from Detroit, sitting in for Mike. Mike will be gone all next week. Mike and Kathy and little Molly off on vacation. And a string of us will be sitting in for Mike. I'll be back next Friday as well. In the meantime, please join me, 800-989-1480. We've already been broadcasting for 2 hours, if you're just joining us. Oh, a variety of subjects, and probably take me too long to summarize them all. Here's something that struck me. I was talking earlier about the U.S. as being an armed madhouse for its military-industrial complex. It spends $1 trillion a year, and we're talking about adding in everything, because if you just look at the war budget, it's about a half a trillion, but when everything else is factored in the other departments, we're talking about $1 trillion a year. It's an armed madhouse. It's a system of insanity, of absolute insanity. It's going to bring us, it's already almost broken us. We're almost broke, things could get a lot worse, obviously, and we're wasting all of this money. But it's also based on madness and armaments, but it's also at a micro level as well. We're the most armed country in the world. Isn't it like 200 million arms that we all have? And just over a couple of days, I just wonder whether people see all of this, all the university shootings, but all the ones like two freeway shootings, one fatal, a driver on a Los Angeles freeway was fatally shot in the head early Sunday, hours after another driver was shot in an attack about 30 miles away, the latest in a string of attacks on Southern California freeways. In Georgia, a retired teacher bearing a grudge over his mother's treatment at a hospital in Columbus, where she died, shot one of her nurses and another employee to death, still in Georgia. A man who sent a letter to his father indicating he was going to kill his children was found dead with his three youngsters in a wooded area, shot them all. Four cars struck by gunfire in Virginia. Four cars struck by gunfire on Interstate 64 early Thursday. Back to California, a son of an auto wrecking yard owner shot four people to death at the business in Santa Maria, California. There's a bill, and think about how people are reacting to this. I mean, there's two groups of people. One say, we've got to really limit the number of guns that people have in their hands. I mean, if you have 200 million guns, I suppose, and there's this level of violence, it's not a bad percentage. It's, you know, it's pretty low. You know, maybe 0.1% actually act out any antisocial behavior with the guns that they have, but we're kind of having a slaughter going on here. And on the other side, in Arizona, for instance, there is a state senator, Karen Johnson, who sponsored a bill that would allow guns on campus. I don't know if you know where you think I'm going. You're probably wrong. I think the problem is insolvable. I think this is an armed madhouse. You're not going to be able to take away anybody's guns on any basis that's going to really cut into people's capacity to shoot people. Here in another article from the New York Times, in an era of school shootings, a new drill. Remember when, if you're old enough, you were in these, well, either had, everybody had fire drills, and also they had air raid drills, because if the Ruskies were going to fly over the United States and drop atomic bombs on us, we were going to be ready, because we were going to be in the basement. Yeah, but some of us actually learned the silhouettes of Soviet bombers so we could identify them, so we could tell the Ruskies. We'd say, whoa! That's a TU, whatever those things were, and they've probably got atomic weapons coming over Detroit, and they may be dropping that A-bomb on my school, so I better get in the basement. Of course, the Soviet Union never had any intention ever to attack the United States, with certainly not with bombers, and were scared to death that the United States would, in fact, attack and occupy the United States, because the United States did have contingency plans for attack, pardon me, and occupation of the Soviet Union, just like the United States has battle plans and occupation plans for every single country in the world, including Canada, including Mexico, including England, including France, including Liechtenstein and Andorra. Those may be a 3x5 card. And you could say, well, that's understandable. A country with a great global reach, you don't, if all of a sudden some, you know, Al-Qaeda seized power in Canada, you didn't want to start saying, well, what do we do? Where's their big city? Who's the prime minister, right? Which most people, even in Michigan here, which borders on Canada, don't know who the prime minister of Canada is. So you want to have those contingency plans all set up. On the other hand, I think it says a great deal about the country in which we live. In fact, I don't even know why Canada has an army. I'm always on my Detroit shows. I'm always on about that Canada ought to disband its army completely, not start whining that it's going to withdraw its troops from Afghanistan if NATO doesn't send more troops, but pull them out, disband the army, get rid of their navy, and concentrate the billions and billions they'll save on social services, like their medical program that is a little underfunded, needs more money. So what do you want, a navy? Do you want troops in Afghanistan? For what? And a prime minister who's a Bush clone, Stephen Harper, he wants to build all these new battleships and all of that. This is armed madhouse. This is armed madhouse stuff. Anyway, let's go back to the micro version of armed madhouse. Tim Matheny stalked the silent hallways, pardon me, of South Brunswick High School one recent Wednesday at 1:07 p.m., peering into the dark, seemingly empty classrooms and jotting down room numbers whenever he heard giggles behind locked doors. Students were supposed to remain silent and out of sight. Mr. Matheny, the school's principal, was roaming the suburban campus as if he were an active shooter, a la Virginia Tech or Columbine, as part of a lockdown drill now required twice a year here and in many schools around the country. Gone are the days of the traditional fire drill, where students dutifully lined up in the hallways and proceeded to the playground, then returned a few minutes later. Now, in a ritual reminiscence of the 1950s, when students ducked under desks and covered their heads in anticipation of nuclear blasts, many schools are preparing for, among other emergencies, bomb threats, hazardous material spills, shelter-in-place preparation, in which students would use schools as shelters if a dirty bomb's plume were to spread dangerously close, and armed, roaming sociopaths. Hello, America. This is horrible to do to our kids, and I'm not even saying it's unnecessary, because these threats become real, and the question is, what is the basis of a population that engenders, even if it's the small minority, such madness among individuals that act out their rage in this morning, in this manner. What am I thinking about this morning? Anyway, when I took part in these air raid drills, we would go down into, and we were like 13 years old and what have you, 12 and 13, and we go down into these bomb shelters or just into the basement, and then to really simulate what would happen, they would turn off the lights, and suddenly, of course, you would have all these young girls screaming at the top of their lungs because some of the naughty boys were pinching them in inappropriate places, which now, these days, would get them suspended from school for a long, long time. One final item. Car chase in Miami results in 5-hour lockdown at a mall. A car chase involving four young men in a minivan and the young father they are suspected of trying to rob ended Wednesday with the lockdown of one of Miami's largest malls. Two of the men raced inside the Dolphin Mall around noon in Miami. The police said that this led to a standoff and a five-and-a-half-hour search of linens and things, Bonita's belts, Borders, and the rest of the mall's 240 stores. They went through all of them. It was unclear whether the men were armed. The two others were later arrested, and the police did not provide many details about the group. But the witnesses in the mall said they had initially feared the worst, possibly a threat of a shooting, a repeat of a shooting in February at a strip mall outside Chicago in which five women were killed. There's more. He goes on and on about that. It said some shoppers were let out of the mall by security guards or police. Most people tried to stay calm. And this here, this is what I think is the most telling statement of all. Tariq Hamad, 37, a shop owner of Palestinian descent, said he was used to this kind of thing. You live in the Middle East and you go through this all the time. This is nothing new to me. So this is what we've become. Pardon me. Middle East. Now, something's wrong here. Well, 81% of us say that we're on the wrong path. Open lines for you at 800-989-1480. Here's James in Toledo. James is listening on Sirius Satellite. Go ahead, James. You're on the Mike Malloy Show. This is Peter Werby.
Yes, Peter. It's good to hear you on the air. I just wanted to make a comment about Randy Rhoads, and I like Randy and everything, and I think we're getting lost in critiquing her presentation, her style of saying, you know, what she said about Hillary, and we're losing the major point that Hillary is actually selling herself. She's cozying up with Rupert Murdoch and Richard Bellingsgate and Fox News and the corporate lobbyists, and I believe that's the point that we need to drill home.
Well, and let me tell you this, James. You could either say things very rationally and cogently and quietly like you did and like probably I would, but what you're saying, I think, is if Randy Rhoads says she's an effing W, it's the same thing.
It is the same thing, and maybe we should, instead of talking so much about Randy and how she said it, yeah, we should acknowledge that maybe it was a little bit more potent than a lot of people like to hear, but we should always resolve it back to the fact that Hillary is selling herself.
Yeah, yeah, and we know what we call people that sell themselves.
Well, some of us call it one thing and some of us call it another, and some of the words are more offensive, but it's still the same thing.
Yeah, and I think the Republic still stands, even though that Randy Rhoads uttered those naughty words, don't you?
Absolutely, absolutely. I guess I am a Barack Obama supporter, but I don't know. I will definitely vote for Hillary if she gets the nomination, but I don't see how she can get it and still have the Democratic Party as one.
I hear you. Thank you, James.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for listening on Sirius as well. And thanks for listening to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby with you on the NovaM Radio Network. Open lines for you at 800-989-1480. We got a break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby with you, broadcasting from Detroit. 800-989-1480. Yeah, money makes the world go round. Remember that song from Cabaret? A terrific one. Here is G, listening to the mic in Madison, Wisconsin. G, hi, it's Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. Go ahead.
Hi, Peter. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to bring up three points, just so that your listeners and you can give, you know, maybe talk about it. The first thing is that I completely agree with you that high taxes are essential, like 90 to 95% after the first $1 million worth of earnings. And the reason I say that is that it will take the greed out of capitalism and keep the need in. What I mean by that is that, let's take, for example, Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan would have produced his music and sang it no matter how much he got paid. But sure. Britney Spears would not have produced her music if she was not going to make oodles of money.
Why do you say that?
Why? Because Britney Spears is a person really without much talent. She did it to make the money.
Okay.
Bob Dylan had an inner urge to produce good music. Like Citizen Kane would still be made because Citizen Kane had something to say. There was a deep passion. Whereas John Wayne movies would not have been made.
This is good.
And Albert Einstein would have formed his theory of relativity, but the App Buster would not have been invented.
The what wouldn't have?
The App Buster. You know, just like all those cheap plastic things which people keep selling.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So that's basically what I mean to say. That's why I think high taxes will cut out the greed and have actually a good advancement of our scientific and social structures.
Well, people aren't that nuts about money in countries where there's a little bit, I keep using the Scandinavian countries as an example. I mean, you know, people want to make money, they want to live a nice life, but here, as that song that we played coming back, people are just, at every level of income, it's understandable at the lower levels or the concern about income, but even the people at the upper levels, they're insane about money.
I know. And my second point is that I'd like to say why, even though I'm an ultra, ultra, ultra way to the left liberal, I would never vote for Barack Obama, because I basically do not want to put a black face on American imperialism. I think that would be far more damaging to this country in the long run than electing a person like John McCain. And before people start throwing brickbats at me, let me explain why. The reason I would say that is that only Americans can change the American imperialistic structure. Nobody else can. It's our responsibility.
Absolutely.
Now, I don't find a difference between Republicans and Democrats. The only difference I find is that Republicans are equal opportunity exploiters. They'll exploit Americans and they'll exploit foreigners. Democrats, on the other hand, will keep the Americans kind of happy so that they don't, you know, go to the streets and take up, you know, and try to change the government, but they will screw the rest of the world, which is, I mean, after all, it's the Democrat who dropped the atom bomb. It's the Democrat who started the Vietnam War.
It's a Democrat that started World War One.
Yeah.
Not so, started World War One, but you know, entered into it. Yeah, you're right.
And that's why, I mean, I would vote for Ralph Nader if he's on the Wisconsin ballot. If he's not on the Wisconsin ballot, I'll hold my nose and vote for John McCain, because I think that will ultimately push Americans to a breaking point where they say, enough of this system, it has to change. And that will not happen as long as the Democrats are in power, because they will take care of the minimal needs of the American people, and everything will be swept under the rug.
Well, gee, that is the sort of the theory of, hooray, the workers are starving, the revolution will be here soon. All right, we got to take a break. Thank you for your call. I'm sure that's going to get some people calling. You want to respond to that? 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Hey, Republicans suck. You got this song, too. I often play it. Here, we'll let this one go for a while.
You got a friend in me.
You do. You got a friend of me. I'm a friend of Mike Malloy's. I'm Peter Werby. Sitting in for Mike. Got about a half an hour more. Lots of time to get your calls. It's toll free at 800-989-1480. This just in, the State Department. Well, let me just read this, rather. Amid investigations into fatal shootings of civilians and allegations of tax violations, Blackwater USA's multi-million dollar contract to protect diplomats in Baghdad has been renewed, according to the State Department. They've brought in $1.25 billion in federal business since 2000. Because they're far-right wingers, they, I'm forgetting everybody involved, but... because I should know them, but they're from my state, right? It's not coming into my brain right now. But they're all connected up into Richard DeVos, Dick DeVos, this far right wing guy that owns Amway and ran for governor, got trounced nicely. so these hot dog Yahoo gun happy guys that know they can just mow down Iraqi civilians without any penalty, they're getting more of our tax dollars. Did you read that, too, that during that that failed offensive against Muqtada Sadr's militia in Basra, that not only did it fail, not only was it part of... Here's where we see the elements of the civil war, not just between the Sunnis and the Shia, but also within the Shiites themselves. That's what that was all about. The United States joins in, you know, bombing places, killing civilians, creating this intense destruction, in Basra. But more than 1,000 Iraqi soldiers and policemen either refused to fight or simply abandoned their post during the inconclusive assault against the Shiite militias in Basra last week. This is according to the Iraqi government. Iraqi military officials said the group included dozens of officers. They're refusing to fight, including at least 2 senior field commanders in the battle. We're paying for all this, of course. The desertions in the heat of a major battle cast fresh doubt. Here we're into year 6, right? Year 6, and this casts fresh doubt on the effectiveness of the American-trained Iraqi security forces. The White House has conditioned further withdrawals of American troops on the readiness of the Iraqi military. Well, they're there, you know, John McCain, more of the same. He is... 100 years we're going to be there. Well, yeah, with them like this, fighting like this, we certainly will be. The crisis created by the desertions and other problems with the Basra operation was serious enough that Prime Minister Nuri Kamal al-Maliki hastily began funneling some 10,000 recruits from local Shiite tribes into his armed forces. Pardon me. The move has already generated anger among Sunni tribesmen, whom Mr. Maliki has been much less eager to recruit, despite their cooperation. Even as officials describe problems with the planning and performance of the Iraqi forces during the Basra operation, signs emerged Wednesday that tensions with Muqtada al-Sadr, the radical cleric who leads the Mahdi army militia, could flare up again. Mr. Sadr, who asked his followers to stop fighting on Sunday, called Thursday for 1 million Iraqis to march the Shiite holy city of Najaf next week to protest what he called the American occupation. He also issued a veiled threat against Mr. Maliki's forces, whom he accused of violating the terms of an agreement with the Iraqi government to stand down, to stop doing the raids, and I guess they just did. They agreed to that. So who won? Sounds like that Sadr did, didn't he? But what is important about this is the majority of Iraqis want us out of there. The majority of Americans want us out of there. The majority of American soldiers want us out of there. So who's left? The 19% of the American people who don't think we're on the wrong road, the whack job far right wingers from Bush on down in what remains of this crumbling criminal enterprise. I don't know. Let's see. Cindy writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. What a brilliant call! The man was very clear and smart. He's not talking about me. G from Madison, Wisconsin called, who's listening on the mic, and he said that he's going to vote for John McCain. More of the same. But he said he's going to vote for McCain because if we get a Democrat in, it's going to lull all of us to sleep, that we won't begin to challenge America's imperial reach across the world, that it will just lead to more Iraqs, more Afghanistans, that that we need to be we need to have be poked more. We need more Bush. We need another 4 years of an extension of Bush. Do I really have to ask you to call 800-989-1480? Cindy thinks that's a good idea. I think it's an awful one. How about you? All right, let's continue onward here. And we're going to go to Jake. He's in Cago in Eureka, California. Hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
Going good.
You know, that was Ralph Nader's argument in 2000, was let's just make things worse and hope that the American people rise up. Well, you know, we've had almost 8 years of Bush and Cheney, and Ralph Nader was wrong, and unfortunately he's running again. And I would hope that people would pay attention to the fact that Barack Obama, who will be the Democratic nominee, is a progressive, in fact, unlike many of our previous Democratic candidates. For instance, Hillary Clinton, look, she just came out with her tax returns. She made $109 million, which might actually help explain why her campaign is acting like a Republican campaign.
She have to be bought off, though, by these corporate contributions? Why doesn't Bill just write a check for $80 million and they'd still have $20 million left over?
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, with his book, sure. But unfortunately, the fact is, you know, she's always been more conservative than she pretends to be. In fact, look at her early history. She was a Goldwater girl. She campaigned for Barry Goldwater back in 1964 as a young woman. She became a corporate lawyer. She was on Walmart's board of directors from 1986 to 1992. You know, this is a person who has been a corporate Democrat, a DLC blue dog, and that's where she's getting her support, you know, from people like Evan Bayh, for instance.
Yeah,
these are the conservatives in the Democratic Party.
I can't imagine, though, that she's going to actually get the nomination. You know, that theory that she's going to be a wrecker and get McCain in there and for, you know, John McCain, more of the same, will set the stage for her to take it easy in 2012. I don't know. I don't know if that makes any sense or not.
Well, I know. I think that might be part of their plan is to hurt Obama to the point where she can run in 4 years against John McCain. But the thing is, Hillary Clinton's never going to have another chance at this nomination. The way she's played this has really alienated a lot of the Democratic base, especially African Americans.
It really is disappointing. And Bill Clinton, I mean, the most disappointing of all, he's more disappointing than her.
Bill Clinton liked to think of himself as the first black president. And look how he acted in South Carolina.
Yeah.
I mean, he was using Karl Rove-like tactics.
Yeah. Well, we shall see. By the way, as you may realize or may know, that Barack Obama has called for an expansion of the American military, and also that his only complaint against Bush's missile defense system, well, it was the same as Hillary's, was that the technology was untested. In other words, there's nothing wrong with putting these missile systems that is going to PO the Russians there. So, listen, I'm going to vote for either one of them. I'm not going to do it with enthusiasm for either, but I think it's up to us to create a mass-based, popular, progressive movement that gives them space to move left. In the way, for instance, that Bobby Kennedy did in 1968. I mean, there hasn't been really a candidate that has moved left in that manner since. And I don't know. Sometimes I hear really good things from Barack Obama. My father just sent me, just looked at my email right now, my personal email, and they're from my 93-year-old father, who is going to be out on the campaign trail for Barack Obama, sending me an email about a very positive one about him. So he's generated a lot of enthusiasm. I just hope it's not the kind of situation where when President Obama invades Venezuela that we go, whoa, what's going on here?
Well, I hear you. But the potential there is in the fact that the public, especially young people, are really active this year because Barack Obama, he's been against the war in Iraq from the start, and he's the only chance we have of bringing our troops home because we all know John McCain's going to want to keep the troops there for 100 years, and Hillary Clinton, you know, she was for this war, and, you know, she really can't be trusted on this issue.
All right. Thank you, Jake.
Thanks, Peter.
Appreciate your call. We're going to a break. I thought this was a little early, but it's okay. Maybe we wouldn't have time for our next guest. It's going to be Don listening on Sirius Satellite Radio in Tampa. Wants to talk about why candidates should have free media. I think it's a good idea. I'll tell you why. Or maybe Don will steal my thunder. But we'll see when we get back. If you'd like to join us in our remaining segment, I'd sure like to have you on the air. 800-989-1480. Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy.
Life is walking by. See the loving tree growing. An empty boat starts.
Come on. I say millions of words every week, and there's a lot more, room for error when you're talking as much as I'm talking.
Welcome back to the Final Countdown. It's the last segment of tonight's Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby sitting in for Mike, and Mike and Kathy and Molly off on vacation. They will be all next week as well. I'll be back next Friday, and Sam Cedar and somebody else. Mark Maron will be in as well, in Phoenix, whispering in my ear. I just got an email at calltalkyes@yahoo.com, where you can always email me. I was invited to speak at Liberation Day 2008. Now, it doesn't say the date. I think it's probably May 1st. Liberation Day is a global day of protest against the civil war on drugs on every first weekend of May. So it must be Saturday, whatever the hell that comes out to be. Hundreds of locations worldwide demonstrate in solidarity for cannabis liberation and an end to policies that have exacerbated the problems of hard drug addiction on a global scale. There's sure to be an event near you. This event consists of the Liberation Day rally in a city park all day long. So it's happening in Detroit as well. It's happening around the country as well. You can go to DetroitLiberation.org, DetroitLiberation.org. I'm sure there's a national website as well and hook into all this. Another anti-drug war event is happening tomorrow in Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is the Hash Bash, the largest attended non-advertised event in the country, where thousands of people show up in the middle of the University of Michigan campus called the DIAG and demand the legalization of marijuana. Then there's a big street fair as well. So anyway, yeah, I'll speak at this Liberation Day event because I oppose the war on drugs. War on drugs, man, I can't even drive on drugs. Yeah, okay, yuck. And John Sinclair, my old pal from Detroit, John Sinclair, the manager of the seminal rock band, the MC5, and also the chairman of the White Panther Party that supported the Black Panther Party back in the day. If none of those names mean anything to you, you might Google them. They're worth a look. John Sinclair and the MC5. Hopefully lots of you know who they are and the significance of them. All right, here's Don. Don's listening in Tampa, Florida on Sirius Satellite. Hey, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I think that we've got too many people with lots of money, and she called them WHORE, and that's about what it is. And there's about half the population that's broke by payday.
Sure.
And can't afford to give bribes. I think that we ought to have an internet, TV, and radio signal for U.S. Congress, U.S. Senate, and U.S. President. I've been advocating this for about 25 years. And
well, you are right on the money, Doug.
Hard to get traction.
Because as long as you got the money on, it's going to always conservatize even the Democratic candidates, because they can't bite the hand that feeds them. Look, if every candidate would have had equal access, I believe that the candidates that most represent the aspirations of the American people would have been Ron Paul on the right and Dennis Kucinich on the left. That's the ones that had programs that really resonate with each side of the political spectrum. And but now, you know, we're going to get these, a couple of barely center leftists against a center rightist, and we need more of that. We need some extreme solutions to the problems that we're facing, and tepid responses. Well, I mean, John McCain has no response whatsoever, but the tepid responses of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, whereas they'll be better than McCain, and some things will change, and we'll get these whack jobs out of our government, and not turning over our dollars to wars and religious nuts and all that. That'll be a big improvement, but we need something a lot stronger. And one of the things is get the money out, get the politicians on the air free of charge. Don, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. I agree with you completely. Here is Rufus. He's listening to KGO in Arcata, California, way up in Northern California there. How you doing? Rufus, are you with me?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Am I on the air?
Hey, you're on the air. I wouldn't lie to you.
I just want to say that violence is the instrument of the ignorant. If we don't learn that, we're going to keep repeating the stupidity.
Yeah, I think so. And wasn't that the message of a man who was assassinated essentially for that message 40 years ago today?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Well, thank you for stating it so simply and eloquently. I appreciate it.
Thank you,
Rufus. Bye.
Bye.
Let's see, we got time to get you all in the air, I think. Here's Mary listening in Fort Lauderdale on Winds. Mary, it's Peter on the Mike show.
Go ahead. Peter.
Hi.
I love your show.
Well, thank you.
I just have a different take on the Randy issue.
Sure.
If you can tolerate one more comment.
I can indeed.
I see it as hate speech that she engaged in, and she was representing Air America, and I can understand why they suspended her. And as a matter of fact, I sent off an email today because I was listening to Sam Cedar, who was doing her show today, and
right.
I sent off an email because I would like the management to know that they've alienated half of their audience by letting her continue to rant and rave about how much she hates Hillary on the air. I think it has turned off half their audience, and that's something they have to look at.
Well, it could have been, I don't know, a bad programming decision, but that's one thing about talk show hosts. You really can just hire and fire them. That's about it. You know, I've got 1 minute left and one more caller. Can I leave it at that?
Sure, thanks.
Thank you, Mary. Bye
okay,
now.
Bye.
Here's Carol Lee. She's listening on the Internet in San Francisco. Carol Lee, hi. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Peter, I've been on your show before. I'm a sex worker rights advocate.
Oh, yeah. Tell us your last name.
Carol Lee.
Oh, Carol Lee. That's right.
That's
I'm sorry.
Right.
They had it all together. That's right. You've been a guest. But Carol Lee, I might only have like 30 seconds.
Okay,
then
well,
we got to go
thing
home.
Is, you know, I've written to Randy a couple of times. I don't like the way she uses the term whore. It's derogatory towards sex workers. She hasn't written back, but I like how Mike does it because he always then says it, a deference to sex workers when he uses the term whore. So
that's good. And the other day, Carol Lee, I was, they had your name run together here, so I forgot it. I was just looking at your book. In fact, your book is called Unrepentant Whore, isn't it?
That's right.
That's right, and you wrote a nice inscription to me when I interviewed you. Hey, thanks for being our last caller.
Okay, thank you.
I appreciate it, yeah. You might look up her book. It's The Life of a Sex Worker called Unrepentant Whore. So I guess I said it here in Detroit on WRIF and WCSX, so it's okay. I want to thank the people here at WCSX for letting me use the studios. Ian Huff in Phoenix for making it all happen. And to all of you. And Mike's going to be out next week. Other hosts, Sam Cedar, Mark Maron. I'll be back Friday. Thank you. Be well. We'll talk next Friday.